This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And talk at talklouisiana.org is where you can reach us on the World Wide Web and send emails. And we'd like to hear from you 3 days post-election. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program along with Vantage Health Plan. Right now, as we look at it, 3 days after Election Day, the election has not been called, but it is very close to being called because Joseph Robinette Biden has moved ahead of President Trump in places that were showing him as a likely loser three nights ago. Pennsylvania and Georgia are now looking like they will be in the Biden column. The overall vote is no question. 300 electoral votes appear to be a possibility for Vice President Biden, but also more than 6 million votes between the two candidates is a likelihood. So in some respects, this is a landslide election, and we did not know the outcome because of what was going on in our world with COVID-19 and many early votes. And because of that, we were uncertain as to who would be the winner at midnight on election night. But right now it appears it is all but certain that Joe Biden is going to be the 46th American president. And with us to talk about it are Mary Patricia Ray, Democratic strategist from Top Drawer Strategies, and also Jeff Satto, LSU Shreveport political scientist who has a conservative point of view. And right now the president is making what is being portrayed as baseless claims by both the New York Times, which some say is a liberal newspaper, and the New York Post, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Jeff Satto, what's your take on whether the president has a case that he is being robbed of victory by a rigged election? What do you think?
I guess we'll find out. This is going to go to litigation. The Supreme Court in some rulings on state election laws prior to the election pretty much indicated as such that it would invite such challenges, and you know probably the vote totals that we'll see early next week are going to be a little bit different than the ones that are going to be submitted to Congress a month later because of those decisions. Whether that makes a difference in the outcome, we'll just have to see.
877-217-5757. That's your Talk Louisiana number, and Mary Patricia Ray is also with us. And Mary Patricia, do you see any real doubt that Joe Biden has won this election?
No, but I see a pretty smart strategy on the part of most major news networks and the Biden campaign to take their time in declaring victory. Until it is not just a projection, but a sure thing. And I think that is pretty respectful of the process. Yesterday, my friend Matt Schlapp, on TV, unable to present any actual explanation as to the voter fraud that the Trump campaign is asserting. And unfortunately for the Trump team, when you file a pleading, it has to actually state a cause of action, and if you don't have any real examples of voter fraud to or assertions that there's possible voter fraud, even any explanation for that, a judge is going to find it pretty laughable.
And this involves multiple states. For Donald Trump to win, he would have to have the votes thrown out in multiple states, some of them ruled by Republican governors. There's certainly a Republican governor in the great state of Georgia. I mentioned yesterday that Donald Trump swept the SEC's 11 states 4 years ago, 148 electoral votes. And he was on the brink of doing it again this time, but it looks like Georgia is going to Biden. But nonetheless, that would be 132-16 for the president in the Southeastern Conference. And right now he has 214 total electoral votes that are secure, and 132 of those are coming from the Southeastern Conference. So this is a case in which the South is the base for the president of the United States. And any Southern senator, particularly a Republican, criticizes the president at his own risk, knowing the president's popularity in this state and in other southern states. And I'm talking about John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy. Mary Patricia, you follow not only what they say, and they're not saying very much right now, but what they're tweeting. Are there any tweets from either of our senators regarding the situation we're in right now?
I did see a tweet from Senator Cassidy yesterday saying that we should count every legal vote. I'm confused about what his assertion is when it comes to legal.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's safe and headed back to a Senate that he doesn't yet know the balance of. So he's going to withhold, I think, any extreme viewpoints on this until he finds out what we're going to do with those two Georgia runoffs.
Yeah, it looks like both Georgia seats are now headed for runoffs. Senator Perdue, the veteran Republican, looked like he was home free, but because of the late Biden surge, he's now at 49.8, and of course he needs more than 50% to avoid a runoff, so it looks like he will be in a runoff with John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, who's the pastor of the, I believe, the Ebenezer Baptist Church, where Martin Luther King presided. He is in a runoff with Kelly Loeffler, who was appointed a U.S. senator. So the action will be in Georgia, and the runoff's not until January. So, my goodness, we're going to have some fun watching what happens in the Peach State. And based on what it appears, Republicans will have 50 U.S. Senate seats before Georgia. Democrats will have 48. So if the Democrats were to gain the two and Biden wins the presidency, then if any tie vote occurs, the tie would be broken by Vice President Kamala Harris. So that's where it appears right now. And Jeff Sato, do you see any chance that the inertia will change, that there will be some major surprise? Maybe the president can pull out Arizona and pull out Nevada, but if Georgia and Pennsylvania go, the math is such that Biden would still be above 270 electoral votes, even without those states. Is there any path to victory right now for our president?
No, it's tough. I mean, Georgia and Pennsylvania probably will be, there will be litigation there, and there was a Pennsylvania case that the Supreme Court prior to the election basically said, bring it back to us after the election if these things happen, and we're going to take a look at it. Georgia, apparently there might be some equal protection issues there on election day. Trump's going to have to come from behind in those other couple of states, and that's uncertain whether he could do something like that at this point.
Right now, with 98% of the votes in Pennsylvania counted, Biden has 3,297,000 and Trump has 3,290,000. 7,000 vote difference in Pennsylvania. And in Georgia, it is even closer. But mind you, this is a state that has not gone to a Democrat in a presidential election since 1992 when Bill Clinton beat George Bush in a three-way race. Joe Biden, 2,449,590. Donald Trump, 2,448,492. So a margin of 1,098 votes between Biden and Trump out of nearly over 5 million votes cast when you count the third-party candidates. So that one, there will be a recount, no doubt, but generally recounts when they're decided by more than 1,000 votes are definitive. But sometimes things can change, and Biden still has some areas that are favorable to him to be counted, so likely he will finish a few thousand votes ahead of President Trump in the great state of Georgia. 877-217-5757, Leonard on airline. Leonard, you were on with Mary Patricia Ray and Jeff Sato. Hi, Leonard.
How y'all doing today?
Fine.
Jim, we saw this coming for a long time ago. You said he was going to be a one-term. And you said that he's not going to leave either. So it's going to be a coup. He's going to try a simple coup. It's not going to work, though.
All right. Well, I don't know what resources the president would have. The military is certainly not going to come to his aid in this time. But last night, Ted Cruz was certainly coming to the aid of the president, as was Nikki Haley and Lindsey Graham, and a lot of ranking Republicans are looking at 2024. And Mary Patricia Ray, the president is certainly not going away. He may very well be running himself in 2024. He could try to become the next Grover Cleveland. But he could end up coming across as a sore loser, and that's usually not a good thing.
Well, I think he's definitely coming across as a sore loser. Case in point, almost all major networks last night during his address from the White House briefing room about a campaign matter, which is already sort of a sore loser, has a sore loser air to it. They had to break into the president's speech in order to correct, you know, just the 1,000% incorrect information that he was spewing to the American people. Not a great look when even Fox News has to do that. And CNN's reported this morning that national defense airspace is being established over President Biden's home in Wilmington, the first trappings of the presidency.
There you go. Well, if Biden were to lose this election, he would become the first candidate to lose after winning the overall vote by more than 50% since Samuel Tilden in 1876, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757 for Democratic strategist Mary Patricia Ray of Top Drawer Strategy. She was very successful in this campaign, leading the charge against Amendment 5, which went down big time in our state. And also, she was the chief strategist for Foster Campbell, the liberal lion from the lovely hamlet of Elm Grove, who's back for another 6 years with the Public Service Commission. But it was a close race for Foster Campbell, who we hope to talk to soon. Jeff Satto is with us, professor of political science at LSU Shreveport for a few decades, and a conservative columnist and commentator who follows the world at large. And before we go back to the callers, a listener wanted your take, and I know you're no fan of your mayor, Jeff Satto, but Bill Cassidy got 59% of the votes, and Adrian Perkins got 19%. I think Cassidy has the satisfaction of saying he won the most decidedly one-sided race in America on Tuesday night for the U.S. Senate. Were you surprised that Mayor Perkins did not do better?
Yeah, a little bit. I did not have high expectations for him going into this, and it's certainly not getting the endorsement of Cedric Richmond, for example, the most prominent federal office holder in Louisiana. That hurt, as you saw. Several-time candidate Derek Edwards is the beneficiary of that. He picked up 8% of the vote.
Actually, I think he got 11.
11? All the way up to that. So,
yeah, if your name's Edwards and you're a Democrat in Louisiana, you got a good shot at getting some votes that people might otherwise not give somebody named.
Unless your name is Kennedy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Kennedy never hurts anywhere you are in the country. Here's a question for both Mary Patricia and for Jeff Satto. Peter Ricca writes, if the final count in the Senate in January is 50-50, who's the majority leader? Do they have dual majority leaders? I think they do.
Yeah, I think so. And I actually don't know of the last time that occurred. But I think the caller's point here begs the observation that regardless of what happens, moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans are going to have to lead in the new Congress. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Speaker Pelosi relinquish her role in the next couple of years and let a new crop of...
Right.
Maybe more moderate people take over.
Well, I would be surprised if both U.S. Senate seats in Georgia went for the Democrats. But if that were to happen, it would be 50-50. And there is a move in the U.S. Senate right now to work on a few senators and see if they're willing to switch parties, which, of course, would change the math. And I think the number one target for that is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Jeff Satto, you can imagine there will be, and the Republicans will probably do the same thing. There might be, I don't know of any conservative Democrats left in the Senate, though.
Now Manchin.
Well, Joe Manchin, but he's a longtime Democrat, but he would be the target. You're right. If they were to choose somebody and offer him a chairmanship, maybe even offer him the majority leader's post after McConnell decides to call it a day. There will be some jockeying, depending on what happens in Georgia in January.
Yeah, I don't really know. The last time we had this situation was about 20 years ago when Republicans, when George W. Bush entered the White House, Republicans had a one-seat majority, but then Jim Jeffords change parties after a few months. And so for about a year and a half, they did kind of have a rotating, at least as far as committee chairman, they had a kind of a rotating schedule, although a majority leader remained the same. So there's a bit of a precedence for that, but I don't think it's going to come to that, particularly. I think it's most likely the Republicans will have 52 seats 2 months from now, and so I don't know it'll get to anything like that.
Miriam on Government Street. Miriam, you're on Talk Louisiana with Mary Patricia and Professor Sato. Hi, Miriam.
Hello. My question is a lot of those mail-in votes are military from overseas. What is that going to do if he throws those votes out as contention?
All right. Now, there are about 9,000 of them, I believe, and obviously they're arriving late. But if you're serving in a war zone, I think you should have your vote counted, Mary Patricia.
Yeah, you know, I hear a lot of Twitter talk about votes being found in the back of vans, et cetera. And when a vote with a proper postmark date is found in the back of a U.S. Postal Service vehicle, it's not as if that is a suspect item, and it was cast on a proper date. It just has arrived at a later date. I mean, if that's a legal vote, even Senator Cassidy says we should count it.
Well, and they're saying that these military votes are going to probably mean that the Georgia race is not called right now, even though Biden has pulled ahead by 1,000 votes. But
the margin,
but if you got 9,000 votes nationwide in 50 states, that, well, let's see, 9,000, and Georgia's a larger state than most. It would mean, I think, about 200 would fall in Georgia. So the odds of that overturning the election, that would mean that it's just not going to happen. Now, they may go into these different precincts and find some irregularities. And last time, for example, in Wisconsin, they had a recount, and both Hillary and Donald got, I think, about 1,000 votes more, but it evened out for both candidates. So we'll see. But this is not like Florida, when 537 votes decided the U.S. presidency and the recount was stopped. There's not going to be a state where the vote count is that close. 877-217-5757. John in Livingston, where President Trump won by 45,000 votes in Livingston Parish. Good morning to you, John. You're on with Mary Patricia and Jeff Sato.
Good morning, folks. I wasn't one of the 45,000. So,
well, actually, there were 54,000 who voted for Trump and 9,000 who voted for Biden in Livingston. Turnout was very good, which is great. But obviously, that has become the most conservative parish in the state of Louisiana.
Certainly is. I have a question. I think I heard on the news just a moment ago that apparently there's some type of maybe military planes flying over Joe Biden's home. And the reporter said this, I'm paraphrasing, could be a sure sign of his presidency.
All right. Well, Mary Patricia referred to that, John, and that probably is it. They're protecting Biden as they're protecting Trump and Pence and Kamala Harris as well. So and in America, you got to do it. They got no other option because of the way our country is. And then let's go back many years. It's been a long time, almost 40, but we had a president who was almost killed in 1981 in Ronald Reagan. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Mary Patricia and with Jeff Sato. Hi, David.
Good morning. To show you an example of how dangerous and tyrannical a Trump administration has been, the London Sunday newspaper is quoting his former top advisor, Steve Bannon, is saying the first business of the new Trump administration should be the beheading of Dr. Fauci.
All right. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. And Dr. Fauci would be a difficult person to fire. And the president, you're a political strategist, Mary Patricia. Fauci, according to polls, is one of the most popular people in America. Who in his right mind, even if he didn't like him, which the president obviously doesn't, attack Fauci? That didn't score him any political points with people he was trying to persuade who weren't already
had their minds made up. This is exactly what I'm talking about with this moderate swing that's going to happen regardless of what happens in the Senate. You know, there are 1,250 spots about that have to be confirmed by the Senate as appointments. And when new President Biden selects those people, he's going to have to deal with he's living in Trump's America. So he's going to have to pick some moderates. It bodes well for moderates everywhere, which frankly, Dr. Fauci is one of, as he talks about science, just simple facts, no politics.
Jeff Sado, what do you think about the president holding on for dear life? Will this in any way be possible for him to ignore the will of the people and challenge the election beyond the court challenge that's already in place?
No, of course not. We've got a very defined schedule in front of us in a little over a month. States have to send their certified election results to the House of Representatives and then the Electoral College.
Okay, we do have to take a pause, but we'll be back. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Nick Diaz and Lauren Hickman are producing. Lauren notes that November 6, 1860, 160 years ago, Abraham Lincoln was elected the 16th American president. Donald Trump says he's done more for African Americans in this country than any president, with the possible exception of President Lincoln. And November 6, 1947, NBC's Meet the Press debuted, longest-running show in American history. So that's 73 years. 877-217-5757. November 6, 1947, Donald Trump was 1 year old in Queens, New York. Joseph Biden was in Scranton, PA, and he was four, almost five. 877-217-5757. Let's go to the phone lines with Mary Patricia Ray and with Jeff Sado. And let's start with Nick Diaz. Let's start with Mike downtown. Mike, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hello, Mike.
Well, I'm in Villadelphia, but Jim, really enjoyed your analysis on Channel 9.
Thank you.
Now, we've built a wall, a blue wall. And I want to know from the political experts there, all those people that were going to leave the country when Biden got elected, where are they going to go? Countries won't let us in because of Trump's bungled COVID response.
Let's go start with Mary Patricia on that. The president is not popular in many parts of the world. Can that immediately be rescinded, the hard feelings with a new president, or will it take time?
I would be asking, where's Donald Trump going to go? He has said that he might leave the country, and it kind of begs why, but he's going to have to deal with some debt. I think he's going to be under very close scrutiny from some prosecutors in New York, and I'd be wondering who will be taking him at this point in time.
Well, we're fascinated with Donald Trump, and we can thank him for the high turnout on both sides. And when all is said and done, I said yesterday 150 million. I think we're probably going to have closer to 155 million people vote, which means at the end, Biden was going to receive over 80 million votes. The last time Hillary Clinton got right about 66 million, and same number that Barack Obama received in 2012. So the president has energized us. He is the gift that keeps on giving for television networks, including MSNBC. They have benefited enormously from a Trump presidency. Jeff, I suspect that the media will be covering Trump's every move, knowing that he's good for business. He's a fascinating character. He is a former president. He may end up having legal issues. Can you imagine the Trump trial? That would exceed the OJ trial, I think, in interest if it were to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. No, be more chance of a Biden trial than a Trump trial.
You think
at this
so?
Point. Oh yeah, certainly. The Hunter Biden investigation is not going to go away. There's much more credible evidence than concerning that than there ever was for any of the imaginary offenses that Trump was said to have committed over the last 3 or 4 years.
All right. Well, Mary Patricia, he calls Jeff Satto, Dr. Satto, this erudite man, calls them imaginary offenses and says that there's credible evidence that the Bidens are corrupt, and I think he's saying that our president-elect could end up being a jailbird. Your thoughts?
With much respect for Professor Satto, I think that it's just a very good thing that we are going to elect someone that will be focused on leading in reality and bringing people together and healing division in one of the most divisive times in our country. And I am excited that we might be able to get back to the real work of governing that's been ignored for the last 4 years in favor of imagining things.
All right. Patrick in Innisfail States. Hi, Patrick. You're on with Professor Satto and Mary Patricia. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I got a question for Professor Satto. Do you think we're going to become the next, like, Venezuela in the next 10 years with, you know, they're going to be shutting down energy companies, they're going to make minimum wage to where small business can't afford to hire workers, we're going to have, like, an underground economy. I mean, I can see this, but, you know, it started with the CARES Act and this whole COVID thing.
All right. Is socialism rampant? Is the country as we know it going to change with President Biden, Jeff?
No. There's just, you know, that's something that's mainly confined to Democratic activists, leadership, and the like. It's certainly not the default position of the vast majority of the American public. And, you know, we look at the election results, and there's no way that anything like that could be implemented. I mean, there's plenty of mischief that the administrative state can perform, but as far as something like that, the way that elections are going to pan out, no, that's just not going to happen now.
All right. Mary Patricia?
Yeah. Well, I'm more afraid of fascism than socialism. And I think most of the American people are, too, when they understand what fascism looks like. And what it looks like is the president at the podium in the press room last night virtually suggesting a coup. And I'm much more concerned about that than any form of socialism that we may see in this country anytime soon, including whatever people seem to be concerned about with socialized medicine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting that the president and his helpers were saying stop the vote in one part of the country and saying count the votes in another part.
And I don't know if that's fascism, but it's definitely hypocrisy.
Well,
definitely skirts on anti-democratic values, for sure.
Let's go to James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Mary Patricia and Dr. Satto. James?
Hi, good morning, Jim. The hysteria on the radical right is unbelievable this morning. It might even get worse. First, a shocking statement, and then a question, Jim. Steve Bannon said yesterday in a podcast that Trump should start his second term by beheading Christopher Wray, FBI director, and Dr. Fauci. And my question is this. If there's such rampant fraud in our voting systems, systemic voter fraud, as Trump is alleging, how come more Democratic candidate didn't win their race?
Okay. The coattails weren't very great for Joe Biden, and I think the Democrats thought they, in fact, the prognosticator said there was a 3 chance in 4 that Democrats would get the Senate. And unless everything goes right, that means the 2 wins in Georgia and the Biden presidency, the Senate will not be in control of the Democrats. And Mary Patricia, Joe Biden will have to work with Republicans. And some people like divided government. But is it better to have one party in control, or is it better to have one party with at least one house, one of the two houses of Congress?
I think what's good for the American people is to have a government that's accountable to them and not TV ratings or the creditors and debtors that are associated with the leader of the free world. And so we're going to have a government that can be accountable to us, no matter what our viewpoints are, and that's going to be refreshing.
Stephen in Denham Springs. Stephen, you're on with Jeff and Mary Patricia. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm just shocked about Georgia. What do y'all think about how the future of Georgia will look if Biden wins Georgia?
All right. Georgia is one of those states there, like Houston and Dallas, more than 1,000 people a week move to Atlanta. And Atlanta is driving the engine here for Joe Biden. Those votes that are being counted are in the Atlanta area. And like many urban areas, Jeff, including Louisiana, for example, Donald Trump got 43% of the votes in East Baton Rouge Parish. Bill Cassidy got 45% in East Baton Rouge Parish, his hometown, basically repudiated by his hometown. What do you make of this chasm we have between urban and rural voting across the South and in many parts of our country?
Well, go ahead, Dr. Sadow.
It's been a trend that you know, has been going on now for some time. It's a fairly complicated thing in the sense that suburbs are, in a way, becoming more Democratic, but then exurbs are becoming larger and larger. And in a sense, it kind of all balances itself out. But, you know, there is this more concentration in central cities of Democrats. But we also find that in many of these central cities, they're in decline in population and wealth and the like. And so, I wish I could give a better answer, but it's just very complicated.
Well, I think we now have to have a precinct by precinct strategy in both rural and urban places in terms of when we're working on campaigns. And you've got to know exactly how many votes you want in each precinct, regardless of whether it's an urban or rural place. And you have to be more open to specialized messaging and meeting voters where they are, which I think makes our representation more accountable. People might not always like less extreme messaging. They want things to be very extreme. But if you can't win, then you can't really accomplish much. So, I think it's going to change how we use technology going forward in these campaigns.
Something for people in Louisiana to consider. In 1960, Louisiana had the same number of electoral votes as Florida. Florida now has 21 more electoral votes than us because of the growth in population. And New Orleans was about the same size as Atlanta, Houston, and Dallas, and all of those cities are bigger than the whole state of Louisiana. Now, Ken in White Oak Landing. Ken, you're on with Mary Patricia and Jeff.
Thank you, Jim. I'd be interested in hearing your guest comments as to the future in the Democratic Party with respect to the positions they're going to take. Obviously, Mr. Biden was more moderate than...
All right, we're heading to a break, and thank you, Ken. What about the Democratic Party? Joe Biden says he is the Democratic Party, Mary Patricia. It would appear that he may be more moderate than some of the others who are in high positions.
Well, we'll soon know what kind of government he's able to accomplish through the Senate and what the balance of power is going to be there. I think that will determine how extreme the policies of the Democratic Party are able to be over the next term, and they definitely have a lot of soul searching to do.
We'll be back in a few more minutes with Jeff Sadow and Mary Patricia Ray, and we'll also hear from Phoebe Hayes of the Iberia African American Historical Society. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mary Patricia Ray and Jeff Sadow with us for a few more moments, 877-217-5757. We've got a few folks waiting to talk with them, and please be brief in your remarks to our two esteemed guests. Let's go to Dan downtown. Dan, good morning, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana. Nick, you're going to have to pull up Dan on line three. Go ahead. Dan downtown, you are on the air.
Professor Sadow, do the Lincoln Project Republicans, you know, like George Conway and Steve Schmidt, have any future in GOP politics?
What do you think, Jeff Sadow, about the Lincoln Project people? Are they dead meat in the Republican Party?
Yeah, they were inconsequential to begin with, so, you know, nothing to nothing,
What were they inconsequential in your view, Mary Patricia?
No.
Turn your mic on.
I think everything counts right now, and I'm just delighted to see us just really examining all of this, slowly taking our time, and no, I don't think anything's inconsequential.
All right. Let's go to... Shenandoah, David in Shenandoah, you are on the air with our two guests. And once again, Nick, you're going to have to pull up David for us. There we go. David, you're on with Mary Patricia and with Jeff Sadow.
Hey, good morning, Jim. I just want to say one thing. At the end of the day, our country is the greatest democracy in the world. one nation under God, and we do have laws in this land, and we those laws will be followed, and that Joe Biden will win through Arizona and Nevada.
All right. Mary Patricia, would you like to respond to David in Shenandoah?
Well, I told Jim that, you know, I found it encouraging when I heard about the airspace being established over his house. And because what it means is that we will not allow any single person to disrupt a peaceful transition of power, even if for some reason, by some miracle, that means that Donald Trump remains in the White House. We are a nation of laws. And it shows up in today's numbers on Wall Street. Confidence up that no matter what the outcome is going to be, we're going to remain stable.
All right, let's check the numbers since Mary Patricia brought it up on Wall Street. And by the way, we have noted that the Dow Jones Industrial Average generally performs better when Democrats are in office. That may be the luck of the draw, but the top three presidents in Dow Jones performance are Clinton, Obama, and FDR. Right now, it's down 0.16%. So there you go. It's not really a blip on the radar right now. Time for a call or one more, I think, for Jeff and for Mary Patricia. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Please be brief.
All right. Yes, I think since General Motors came out with an electric Hummer, that pretty much oil is not going to be used for transportation, and it's not a crop. We'll run out of it, so please be smart as you really can. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, what about final comments briefly from you, Mary Patricia?
Yeah, a lot more counting to do in Georgia, but we're moving from MAGA to PAGA, Pennsylvania, Georgia. And so I'm sure like a lot of people, I'll be glued to my TV today.
And Dr. Sato, parting comments from you today. Jeff, your thoughts?
A little over a month from now, we'll finally have some answers.
All right. Thank you for both of you to join us and appreciate your insights as always. And we're joined now by Phoebe Hayes, Dr. Phoebe Hayes, who's founder and president of the Iberia African American Historical Society. And good morning to you, Dr. Phoebe Hayes.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, you.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. And
thanks.
There we go. We're getting some feedback, but I think that's better. Dr. Hayes, your thoughts about your organization has been around since 2017, but this area where you are, and you are a native, violently expelled all of its African-American doctors and NAACP leaders in 1944, 76 years ago. It has a past that in some ways, of course, is, to say the least, not pleasant.
That's correct. But it's not different from what other former Jim Crow era communities have experienced. You know, this was during that time, there was legal segregation, and there are residual effects of that segregation. One of the things I discovered is that much of the history of African Americans, especially after the Civil War, you know, into Reconstruction and Jim Crow, much of that history was hidden. Was hidden or erased in some cases. So our mission is to uncover as much of the history as we can and to teach our community about the contributions of African Americans in Iberia Parish and the surrounding communities.
Well, Dr. Hayes is a lifelong resident of Iberia Parish. She retired from the University of Louisiana Lafayette after 26 years of service, professor of communication sciences and disorders, and she was dean of the College of General Studies for 15 years as well. You are the descendant of West African ancestors enslaved on local plantations, and that, of course, is a story that is unfortunately not unique to you, but it has given you some context as to what you're doing now. And you, of course, are focusing on the past and the present and melding the two together. What about your ancestors and how that has affected you?
Oh, thank you. I am a descendant of West African slaves or enslaved persons who worked on area plantations, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to identify most of those plantations. But my ancestors, they were not defined by slavery. They, many of them walked away from those plantations once the Union Army occupied Iberia Parish. The men joined the Union Army, Union Navy, I've purchased many of their pension records, and I'm so proud of who these people were. Then they returned to this area, not because necessarily they loved their owners, but because they had nowhere else to go. They knew the fields. So they returned to these areas, this area in Iberia Parish, and they bought land, and they built churches, these veterans. They built churches in their little communities, and they built schools. And I don't think any of this history was actually taught to us when we were in school. You know, the mm-hmm. role of the black veterans who served in the Civil War, either the Union Army or the Union Navy.
Your high school was integrated while you were going to high school, so we saw a mm-hmm. big change then, and it's 50 years yes. later. What about then and now? We've come a long ways. We obviously have many miles to travel, but how has that experience of having lived through segregation and integration affected you?
Well, it took a long time for the schools to be desegregated. Jim Crow began somewhere right after the Reconstruction period. So almost 100 years later, the Jim Crow period ended. And a child like me could go to any school he or she chose to go to that was desegregated. I first went to the historically black Jonas Henderson Senior High as a freshman. The next year, our class was transferred to New Iberia Senior High as 10th graders. And that was the first time that I and my classmates had ever gone to school with non-black students. And it was an experience. But I have to tell you that it wasn't all bad. There were some terrible times. There were some very difficult times for all of us as we tried to make adjustments. But my recollection is that most of the negatives came from the adults in the community who refused to accept change. It wasn't most of the students.
What do you make of what we're going through right now? We had an incident in Lafayette in which an unarmed African-American man was killed by law enforcement. Obviously, that's something that sadly is going on in many parts of our country. What about it?
That broke my heart because I love Lafayette Parish, and I want to believe that this little community like ours is better than that. The idea that there are difficult relationships between law enforcement and the black community is not something that just started. Historically, there have been situations where blacks were terrorized in their own communities. And I am not by any means saying that all police officers are enemies of the black community of blacks. It's just that historically, when you look at what has happened, where black men were shot down in their own yards for no other reason than, for example, dating white women or just for senseless reasons, executed, lynched, as you will. There is a history there that has to be talked about, has to be addressed, so that trust can be built between the black community and law enforcement.
We have about 30 seconds left, but you had four of your ancestral grandfathers fight as members of the United States Armed Forces, and yet when they came home, they didn't get equal treatment. That is one of the heartbreaking remnants of our country.
Yes, yes. No, they did not. I can remember when my father told us about coming from Korea and how wonderful it was when they were in Europe. But the minute they got back on the trains, headed back to Louisiana, they had to stop in Mississippi. Their black comrades met through the front door of these little out-of-the-way restaurants, and they had to go to a little hole in the wall. In the back of the restaurant to get their meals.
Well, Dr. Hayes, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we want to talk with you some more very soon. Dr. Phoebe Hayes, founder of the Iberia African American Historical Society. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan.